Welcome to SciShow Tangents, the frightfully competitive science knowledge screamcast. I'm your ghost, Hank Gangrene. And joining me this week, as always, is mad scientist, Scary Riley.
Hello.
And our resident Everywolfman, Sam Skulls.
Ow, ow, ow.
The old calendar on the wall says it's Halloween time once more, and we here at SciShow Tangents love getting into the Halloween spirit, and this year is no different. October is trick-or-treat month, and Sam and Sari have invited some ghoulish guests over to Tangents Manor to join us this month. In fact, I hear one of them approaching the door now.
Trick-or-treat.
Trick-or-treat.
Hello.
Hello, welcome to Tangents Manor.
Oh, thanks. That's so cool. Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Our car broke down outside and there was a light here over at the old green place. So we decided to just come and use your phone.
Everybody, it's Justin and Sydney McElroy of Sawbones and also of trying to become a representative of some sort of the state of West Virginia.
Yes, I am in the House of Delegates.
A delegate.
Nothing scarier than the U.S. government.
Very spooky.
West Virginia state government.
Yeah, West Virginia state government is somewhat spookier, yeah.
Yes, definitely populated with ghosts, or at least people who seem like they probably should have retired by now.
Do you want to hear about the 15 gallons of chili that we made this weekend?
Is that how you win an election? Is that like the main way to the House of Delegates?
Chili? In West Virginia, that's a big part of it.
Yeah, slinging chili, slinging meat and beans.
He's like, show up at somebody's door and you're like, you want a gallon?
It was for Chili Fest, which in Huntington, it's like the Christmas of Huntington. And it's a chili holiday. We have many food festivals just in Huntington. Mm-hmm. Just in Huntington alone. The Pumpkin Festival, the Chili Fest.
The Hot Dog Festival.
Wow. Rib Fest.
Rib Fest, too.
Ramp Fest, so at least one vegetable.
Just onion.
Stink Fest is what that's called.
Stink Fest?
Stink Fest is like a festival celebrating ramps.
Because ramps are stinky.
Ramps are stinky. Yeah. But yeah, we're big in the food fest. So we did a booth for the Democrats, the Capital County Democrats. And between Sydney's mom and I, we made 30 gallons. 30 gallons of chili.
Where are you keeping all
in what vessel? Well, yeah.
Yeah. So that's a great question.
I'm picturing, let me tell you what I'm picturing. I'm picturing.
Bathtub. I'm thinking bathtub.
Like Yeti coolers.
Those are part of it. Absolutely.
Okay.
And
just not just filled with chili, though. Not just like.
No, I was picturing like you just push the button and it comes out the spout.
It's like we use Gatorade coolers and just push the button at the bottom and it all just gooshes out. No, it's a bunch of freezing and pots and gallon storage bags. Mm-hmm. And then I was heating up the chili while people were eating the chili. And then I would have to dump the big pot of chili into the eating pot. And I would ask people, please don't look at this part. You're hungry for chili and you won't be hungry after you watch a man dump 3 gallons of chili into a pail. I guarantee it's an appetite killer right there.
Was it a hit? Did people like the chili?
I mean, we sold out of all 30
gallons.
They really did.
Yeah. No, wow. It went over well.
Oh, did it cost? Was it free chili or was it cost chili?
So the whole thing is a fundraiser for the Ronald McDonald House. And the way that it works is you go buy your tickets and then you exchange your tickets for chili at all the various chili booths.
Yes. The organizers of the Infinite Wisdom had put us, our booth, directly across from the political opposition, the counterpart of the Democrat Cabell County Party. And they ran out of chili in an hour. They brought 2 standards with Donald Trump and 1 pot of chili. So I don't know. Maybe it's time to spend a little more time fulfilling those promises.
More chili, less Donald.
Yeah.
This is definitely how we heal America. Here at Tangents Manor, we have a similar thing, except instead of chili, it's just big bowls of eyeballs because it's creepy season. But instead of talking about that, I do want to talk about, I recently went to Bozeman, Montana, to also do an event related to the election. I was doing an event with Monica Tronell, who's running for one of the 2 Montana House districts. And in the third row back, so the first row was reserved for a family of Monica Tronell. Second row, normal people. Third row, normal people. One of them held up a banner that said, "I love Sam Schultz." And I said, because I was in a place that's quite close to Sam's hometown, and I was like, do you know Sam? And he said, no, I just love Sam. I wow. think maybe it was like a brother or a friend.
That's lovely.
But no.
You didn't think people could just like me without knowing me, Hank?
Well, it was close, but I had just been in Butte.
I like Sam. I've known Sam all of 8 minutes. We like Sam.
That's very exciting. I'd love to see it. Did you take a picture of the banner?
Oh, God, you know, I did.
This was a big moment for me.
What a massive mistake. I know.
You could have gotten
it. I hear you. Bozeman man, if you still have your banner and didn't throw it in the garbage, can you take a picture of it and send it to us on Twitter or at
Sasha? I would like to see it.
It's going
to
be just as impressive draped across this couch as it was held up in a big crowd, for sure.
So, Justin, Sydney, would you like to know how our podcast works?
Please. Sure. Yeah, at this point, I'm just grasping at straws.
So every week here on Tangents, we gather to try to unnerve, disgust, and delight, and horrify each other with science facts while trying to stay on topic and failing. We are all playing for gory and for candy, which we will be awarding as we play. And at the end of the episode, one of us will be crowned the king of Halloween. And if the guest is the trick of Trick or Treat Month, here's the trick. Our regular panel will take turns presenting games this month, and I get to play along some.
There's two tricks, according to you, but that's okay.
I don't know what's going on.
That's fine. You did great.
Now, as always, we're going to introduce this week's topic with the traditional science poem, this week, I think, from our guests.
I gave this job to Sydney, who has written not one, not two, but three science poems.
Oh, no.
I wrote a Shakespearean sonnet, I wrote a haiku, and I wrote a limerick.
Nice.
Whatever you prefer.
We have time for all three
style.
Of them, of course.
I'm going to need all like three. I'm sorry.
Yeah. His brain was created. Very excited to have a project that was not campaign or child related.
You want to read my science poems? I feel weird reading my own poems.
You want me to read your science poems?
Yeah, will you read my science poems? Sure. You have such a nice,
very cute poem professional voice. Podcaster voice.
Yes, that's you.
I'm very cute.
This is the sonnet. What more central farrier than you, who with each beat breathes life into our limbs? But for you, for your flow, our lips would fade to blue and every mortal functioning would dim. Although our vital need for you is clear, an absence of your warmth ensures our doom. The sight of you in some can evoke fear and cause to faint the staunchest in the room. To find your secrets too small for the eye, we smear across a slide and peer to view obsessively. Count, test, and try to help guess if help or harm you mean to do. So I will write and seek to understand you as you fuel my brain and move my hand.
Ooh. Holy shit.
Ooh, nice.
What's next?
Wow. Here's your haiku.
The haiku, a flutter of nerves, cause color and warmth to flow, the fleshing of cheeks.
Haiku. Ooh.
Wow.
And there's my blood limerick. Wow,
yeah. For a surgeon to be rated on top, she must carefully guard every drop. But she need not feel stressed, for as I can attest, eventually all bleeding will stop.
That's a dark one.
That's a dark one.
Oh, I thought it was stopped because the guy got better. He didn't get better.
Okay, well, all bleeding stops because we have enough band-aids for everyone.
Oh, thanks for mixing it up and giving us lots to think about and many things to feel, including the reality that we all must die.
I didn't mean to bring that into the energy.
Yeah, we come around to that a lot, kind
of. Almost like a pretty central fact of the, not so much the podcast, but the existence part of the thing that we're doing right now. So, yeah,
but it's exciting too. That's what makes it all the more luscious. Memento mori, right? It's thrilling. Halloween's a good time to get those fears out and just be like, I know you're there. I get it.
Just like the surgeon counts every drop, we have to count every moment and then feel really bad when we realize how many of them we're spending on Twitter. Sari, yes. What is blood?
This one actually has a definition that is pretty precise.
Okay, great.
So blood is a circulatory fluid in various animals. So we don't consider in prokaryotic organisms, which are entirely single-celled. That's just cytoplasm hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
That's just cell goop. But when you have multiple cells and organ structures, you need some sort of fluid to carry things around, whether it's nutrients or oxygen or your immune system, whatever immune molecules you have, and to help regulate temperature and the acid content of your body. And in invertebrates like arthropods, so spiders and crustaceans and insects, you have a fluid that you can call blood. It's sometimes called hemolymph also because they have what's called an open circulatory system. So just chambers within them. And the fluid washes over the organs and just kind of carries everything around. Whereas in vertebrates, so humans, birds, reptiles, things like that.
Fish. I forgot all the fish.
The fish too. Anything with a backbone. Uh-huh. Blood is carried within vessels. It's a closed circulatory system and has the protein structure hemoglobin, which is iron-based, and that's what helps transport oxygen throughout it. So if you were a vampire looking to drink blood, you probably wouldn't crush a bug and like squish that goo. Yeah.
Can we just pause for a second? Because we've all realized, I assume, like myself, that invertebrates just the blood's just squishing around loose in there, huh? I find that very upsetting. There's no veins or anything. The blood just kind of gooshing around, all higgledy piggledy. I find that very concerning. What if it gets to the wrong places? How does it know where to go?
For some reason, this is like fine for me when it's a fly, but when it's a lobster, I'm not on board anymore. Oh, I'm like, that's too much gushing.
Like a giant squid, all in that big body. It's just gooshing in there.
It's a blood balloon.
That's a real big boy. Mm-hmm. Real big goosh. Is that the biggest goosh?
I don't know. Can you think of a giant clam?
Is a giant clam bigger than a giant squid?
The largest invertebrate.
Yeah. If it's a worm, worms have closed circulatory systems. Oh. So even though they're an invertebrate, they have little vessels. So
why?
Earthworms have little vessels. I don't know. I didn't decide that.
Is there some advantage to being gooshy or being vessely, or is it just whatever? You don't know that either.
I don't know the answer. Guess is
form
that
follows function, Sam.
This is the point in every episode you reach where you go to the Lord in prayer and ask divine design.
We really push the envelope of my science expert title as I make so many uncomfortable noises. I think they just evolved that way. I don't know.
Sure.
It made more sense for them to stop gooshing at some point.
Points to us for getting the largest invertebrate, which is the squid. The colossal squid is the largest invertebrate. We were on it. I had never thought about it before, but it makes a lot of sense. And do we know where the word blood comes from?
So this is an interesting one, very Halloween-y in my opinion. Mm. So there's the Latin sanguine, which you've heard of that. There's the Greek haema, which is where we get like hemoglobin and hemato, like those prefixes.
Sure,
but the word blood appears in a lot of different Germanic languages. So Old Saxon, Old Norse, Old English. But it just kind of popped up out of nowhere. And the Oxford English Dictionary, and from there, we think that blood was used as a word because what we used to call blood was somehow like forbidden or taboo. So it had some weird name, like the mystical substance within us. Mm-hmm. And no one was allowed to say that. And so we were like, let's call it something funny, blood.
Blood.
And then everyone started using blood. And we just collectively agreed. We Europeans, white people collectively agreed. We're like, we'll just call it blood. We'll ignore whatever it was called in the past. That's too gross and yucky. Huh.
What the heck? There's a lost creepy word for blood?
I like the idea that like it's so powerful that we lost it. And so like if somebody out there knew the word for blood, then they'd be able to like make you do a dance even if you didn't want to or something, or just like murder you, make your clots clot. And I also love that we decided that the fun word was blood, which is great.
Yeah, that's great fun word to say in so many different
ways. And it also feels like correct. There's like a lot of words that don't quite match their thing, but I feel like blood, I'm like, yes, I am on board. That's blood.
Like that whoever came up with that, they must have felt very pleased with themselves when they opened their mouth. They're just like, hey, what about this? Blood.
Yes,
you got it.
That's it.
Greg. Man, the branding.
You've been quiet this whole time, Greg. You just working on that one?
Yeah, working on it. I've been thinking about it. I didn't want you guys to laugh.
I now feel overinformed on the topic of blood, which means that it's time to move on to the quiz portion of our show, which I will kick off with a truth or fail. I'm so excited about this one. It's so weird. So there are plenty of very great organs in your body. And though many of us have likely forgotten what the point of a spleen is, it was considered for a long time to be one of our most vital organs, thanks to the belief that it was necessary for black bile, one of the four humors responsible for health, and also considered to be associated with laughter and, confusingly, darker thoughts, which may be why Shakespeare's version of King Richard III involved a rallying cry of, "Fair St. George, inspire us with the spleen of fiery dragons!" The spleen, it turns out, is a small organ just above our stomachs. It's located inside our left rib cage, and it stores blood, it gets rid of damaged blood cells, and it helps us make white blood cells and antibodies when we are fighting infections. And untangling the mechanics of the spleen has led to many strange medical and scientific observations over the years. The following are three stories of spleens, but only one of them is true. Which one is it? Is it story number one? In the 1800s, wealthy English women would consume powdered rabbit spleens during pregnancy because doctors believed it would soothe what they described as overstimulated nerves. Or it might be story number two. Patients have sometimes reported feeling pain long after an injury to their spleen, which doctors have later realized is because cells from their damaged spleen broke off and created smaller spleens in other parts of their body. Or
no.
It could be what? You don't like that one?
No, that's horrible.
No, yeah, that sounds bad. Oh, but that might be fake. It could be story number three. Scientists have realized that people who take Viagra are less likely to be infected with malaria because the medication binds to particular mosquito-attracting molecules in our blood and causes the spleen to clear them from our bodies. Now, I will say here, what? We do have a doctor in our midst. If you know the answers, yeah. Don't give it away.
I don't.
Okay, great.
I do, but I'm going to stay quiet.
I think for the sake of the game, Justin and Sydney can be either on a team or two different people. I was thinking two different people, but it's up to you guys.
What do you want?
I feel
you
like a team. Team feels okay. All right. Just off the top of my head, team feels
fair
good.
Enough.
All right. I know this, though, so...
So it could be story number one, doctors prescribed English women rabbit spleens to contend with pregnancy mood swings. Or story number two, damaged spleens can go on to make many smaller spleens inside the body. Or story number three, Viagra helps the spleen clear out molecules that make us tastier to mosquitoes.
Number one, I feel like you could say, old Victorian ladies, they made them eat this. You could put anything in that blank.
It's true. Possibly. It's true. They powdered absolutely whatever they could get their hands on.
Yeah, that's tough. Because number one, that's what I was thinking. Like, have I said that on our show
it
before?
Like a
maybe
Sawbones
I don't
Mad
know.
Lib,
we've said
like,
something like that. Exactly. Powdered something for mood swings in women. Yeah, this yes.
The second one I hate thinking about. I hate the idea that a second spleen could form an accessory organ. Is that what you called it or something?
Oh, wow.
Or is that what my head made up?
like, you think somebody said that in this episode, accessory organ?
Maybe my head said it as Hank was talking.
I don't think
anybody
said that.
Okay. I usually try and think about like what it would be called if it was a sciencey word.
Right.
I would call it if I would call it in a non creepy way. I'd be like, oh, you've developed an accessory organ here.
Sure.
Looks like
a nice
we'll
calm
have
thing a doctor could call
that.
It to not freak you out too much.
Yeah. Versus like you got a new spleen in your leg, Jeff.
Yeah.
You're full of spleens.
I feel like I would know that, but there's so much in medicine. There's so, you know,
so many things.
Learn things every day.
Mm-hmm. And I gotta say, the last one sounds so specifically weird. That would be a weird thing to lie about.
I feel like I read something about Viagra being a useful treatment for like baby blood. something with that.
Baby like, blood?
It's some, because of the way it...
My baby's great, but he doesn't have the spark that he used to.
We do use it. We do in the NICU sometimes.
Just for Sildenafil. Mainly for confidence?
For,
just
to be- no.
What's it
it's
for?
It's for pulmonary hypertension in newborns to open up blood vessels to allow blood flow. So we do use Viagra in babies.
Okay, now wait a minute. That sounds like
that is a real
that
thing.
That sounds like it
I
could,
don't know about the mosquito part.
But that sounds like it could be it's all, you know?
Yeah. It's blood and Viagra.
I've never heard
and
the that's other it. Part.
It's
know.
Blood. I would pick number one because I don't think that mood swings would have been an idea that Victorian people would have been plugged into. They would have had some other name for it, like
they wouldn't have said mood swings,
but they wouldn't have been the idea. They would have been hysteria or something like that.
Two are false and one is true.
I think the Viagra thing is true. That's where
then
I'm
if
going.
That if that's where we're going, that makes me think the Viagra thing too. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I know. So there are accessory spleens, but I don't believe that they happen that way. That is a thing, an accessory spleen.
Oh. Having an expert making this more confusing.
Yeah. But there's just, there's so many things. I don't know. People write papers on all kinds of stuff.
I think number three, he used the basis of the baby thing for the lie. So I'm going to go with number two being true because, I don't know, just sounds right.
I think I'm going to go with the spleens being true also because this makes me think I didn't make up accessories organ out of my head and it's real because Sydney said it's a thing.
Accessory organs are real. Yes.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
So we've got our answers in now and the reality of it is, and I'm shocked to report that both Sari and Sam got it right.
Oh. Never that-
Man, I let you down, Justin.
No.
So spleens.
I was pushy. Yeah. I should have just
listened. they can grow little tiny spleens on them. And it's called splenosis. And it all starts when a spleen is damaged and some of the cells from it travel to other parts of the abdomen where if they land near enough to a blood vessel, they can grow into a little spleen called an accessory spleen or a splenunculi. Oh, really? A splenunculi? Boy, that's grand. In some cases, these accessory spleens can cause pains, like a case reported in 2016 where a 35-year-old woman reported severe abdominal pain related to splenosis following an injury that happened 19 years before. Fortunately, it doesn't seem to be very common, which is good because it's estimated that around 1 in 5 people have splenunculi in their body.
What?
There's five of us here now. Which of us has the extra spleen?
Hank, you're chock full of spleens. I can tell.
The truth of the matter is all of these were based on some real factness. For example, the first one with the rabbit spleens, throughout history, the spleen was associated with melancholy or sadness because of the accumulation of black bile, supposedly. Mm-hmm. And that melancholy and depression was actually sometimes called the spleen. So if you had depression, you had the spleen because of that connection. Oh. And in the 17th century, a woman named Anne Finch wrote The Spleen, a poem about her experience with depression. In England, spleen was sometimes called hysteria, hypochondria, or vapors, though there was also a gendered element to all of those things. Both men and women could be diagnosed with spleen, but women's spleen was usually considered related to their delicacy or to their reproductive system, of course. And Viagra also does help with malaria. So scientists reported that Viagra could help prevent it thanks to a molecule in the drug called cyclic adenosine monophosphate. And in their experiments, they found that this molecule increased the stiffness of red blood cells infected with the malaria-causing parasite, and that made the spleen more likely to filter them out. So very close to the true fact.
But yeah, that was pretty close. That seemed like it was you're cheating a little bit there, I would say. Okay. Had all the words in it and everything.
Yeah, just different order.
Yeah.
So that means that Sam and Sari and I all got a point. So we're coming in tied to the second part of the show, which I don't know. Is that going to happen after the ad break? Probably. But you're going to have to wait and find out.
Thank you.
turns out that we were going to come back.
That's kind of scary.
We're headed in with a three-way tie, Justin and Sydney coming in last, and Sari has got our second game for us to play.
We got a lot of points up for grabs here, not for me. So today we're going to play a slightly modified game of This or That, where the rules are very simple. The answer to each question will be one of three things. Blood, which is fancy water with sugars, proteins, and lots of complex cells to help animals survive. Nectar, which is fancy water with sugars and lots of complex plant chemicals to help attract pollinators. Or both, because after starting to write this game and thinking I was so clever for drawing parallels between these two substances, I learned that lots of creatures already noticed over evolutionary time and have adapted to eat both.
So it's not that one substance is blood and nectar, which is what I was thinking, which would have been great because it would be pretty called Lecter. But that doesn't exist.
Hannibal Lecter. Yeah.
It's either blood or nectar. Which of these those two things do animals eat?
Yes, it is. The answer to the question will be blood or nectar or both. Gotcha. So one of those three things. And if you get a question right, you get a point / candy. And I am not, it's not built for me to get points. So I am
You've lost.
Yeah. Sari is just giving up on the possibility of winning. That's brave. Okay. Thank you for taking one for the team. Can if it's both, can I shout Blechter?
Yes. Blood, nectar, or Blechter. I guess is the game now. So round one is bats are known for slurping up nutritious liquids. And to learn more about their specialized mouths, a team of researchers observed a couple kinds of bats feeding in a lab with high-speed cameras in 2015. One species, L. robusta, had a grooved tongue that curled up into a loose tube, almost like a straw, but without the airtight seal needed for suction. Instead, these bats used rippling muscle contractions of their tongue to help them slurp up pools of liquid, kind of like how our throats swallow or our intestines push out a poop. Are these rippling, muscly bat tongues for drinking blood, nectar, or both?
I'm going to say nectar because I think you want me to say blood.
Yeah, I think like almost every bat drinks nectar.
We're going to have to answer different from them if we want to have a comeback.
I know, but
here,
I think they're right.
Well, I mean, but if they're right, when we're exactly where we are right now.
And but if we're wrong, we're further behind.
I mean, you gotta something about eggs and omelets here. I mean, no, okay, we'll go.
I feel like, I mean, there might be another one. I feel like it is.
You're all right. It is nectar. Launch of Phylla robusta. I'm using scientific names because their common names will definitely give this game away. This is the orange nectar feeding bat. and the experiment involved, they just did high speed cameras with glass tubes of nectar and they just watched different bat tongues lick it up. And some of them lapped it up like a cat, but this one specifically stuck its tongue in and slurped continuously. And then they were like, it's like an intestine.
Gross.
Kind of.
I guess I say it's gross, but it's basically just like your esophagus, except it sticks out of your mouth, which now that I've said it again, gross.
That's gross. Yeah. That would be gross.
I thought that it was going to be not gross, but then I thought about shooting my esophagus out of my mouth and I didn't like
it. Round two. The islands in the Galapagos archipelago aren't very lush ecosystems because they're so isolated and fairly dry, and some, like Wolf Island, are particularly bleak. But even there, small birds called finches have different beak shapes to help them eke out a living and find food and water. It's what Darwin was interested in. Some sharp-beaked ground finches who live on these remote islands, like G. septentrionalis, have expanded their diet beyond seeds and insects when they need a little extra nourishment. Do these finches use their pointy beaks to drink blood, nectar, or both?
I ain't going first because I know the answer.
You know the answer?
I think so.
I mean, I know at least half the answer.
We're losing, so it doesn't seem fair that we have to answer.
All right.
I'm going with blood. You said they got a sharp beak. Sharp beaks.
I'm going with blood too. I think these are nasty little fellows.
Little blood finches.
See, I felt like that blood was for sure.
Blood is in the bugs, I didn't know so they're eating the bugs.
Yeah, that's why I felt good on blood, but like maybe.
What is it, Blechter?
Yeah, is it Blechter? I don't know. I know you want to say that because that would be a different answer. I know. I see it.
Just say.
I see the determination.
Say what you think.
The fire.
Say Blackbird.
You guys could Blackbird? Be. You could have been on two different teams. You know.
We should have. Yeah. In hindsight. Yeah,
you want to say Blackbird?
No. Just say blood. We'll wait for a moment to pound.
All right. Say blood. Blood.
Oh, well, I'm so sorry. It's Blechter.
Oh.
That was the moment to pounce. That was.
We should have gone
for it. Ouch. Okay.
Their common name is the vampire finch, and the pictures you see of them are pecking at the tails of other birds, specifically the Nazca and blue-footed boobies that land on the Galapagos archipelago.
Mm, yeah.
And these finches have microbiomes similar to vampire bats that help them process all the iron and sodium in blood, which is kind of cool. But because the islands are so sparse, they really need any food source they can get. And Galapagos prickly pear flowers are big and luscious and bloom every once in a while. And so these finches land on the flowers and drink nectar from them, too, with their sharp beaks. Just kind of jab right in there like a bird tail.
You got to look up a picture of these guys, too. They're nasty little freaks.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Birds should all be friends, I think.
Yeah, they should not peck at each other's assholes.
No.
Okay, round three. Snails may seem unintimidating from their squishy outsides, but different species switch up their mouth structures to help them hunt and swallow their preferred foods. For example, instead of a nubby head with lips like an iconic garden snail, the false triton snail, C. reticulata, has a thin, tube-like mouthpart called a proboscis that can extend out to 3 times the length of its shell. And from what scientists have observed, they mostly feed at night. Does this snail use its super long proboscis to drink blood, nectar, or both?
Blood snail.
Snail can never reach the flower.
Why can't they reach the flower?
They can stick to stuff, you know?
They stick and stick their way out.
Justin's like, no snail has ever climbed.
Doesn't sound
right. I've seen them. They are always on the ground.
I wanted to choose Blechter in the last round. I don't know.
I did.
I don't think that anything needs a tongue that long to suck up blood. I think they only need it to get real in those flowers. So I'm going with nectar.
I'm not getting hit again. You have to pick this time.
Blechter.
The answer is just blood.
Yes! Blood snail.
It is a blood snail. This one doesn't have a fancy, spooky name. It's just part of the Colubraria family. It's a marine snail, so there are no flowers down there with nectar.
That's what I thought as well. I was like, that's probably an ocean boy.
And the radula, so their teeth-like structures, are extremely tiny in this genus, so they were considered basically toothless until very recently, but they stick out their very long proboscises into fish, including through any protective layers. So a lot of fish sometimes excrete a protective mucus like parrotfish do, or have outer coatings that would help them prevent any sort of blood suckers. But this snail has the extra long little tubey to poke right in there. And it seems like they take advantage of the blood pressure of the fish rather than active suction. So they'd really just drill a hole in and then let the
blood
erupt
into
their
mouth. Okay.
Yeah, that's what most of the vampire animals do. They don't do it. They just sort of like create a hole and then lick.
Okay, round four. The flashy marsupials are kangaroos and koalas, but Australia is home to lots of tiny mouse-sized species too. One of them, which has the scientific name T. rostratus and the aboriginal name Nulbenger, has an especially pointy snout and weird tongue. Lots of mammalian tongues, including ours, have little fleshy bits covered in a layer of tougher skin cells with more keratin protein. These are called papillae and help give the tongue a rough, grippy texture, among many other things. So T. rostratus has a tongue about a quarter of the length of its body with a tuft of brush-like bristles at the tip to help scrape its foods of choice. Does this little possum drink blood, nectar, or both?
I gotta go with nectar again. You got a bristle.
Seems like nectar. You're collecting. That, I don't know how. Nectar. I don't know how it's getting its little tongue bristles into a vein. That sounds like it's got.
Yeah, that sounds
nectar.
Horrid.
We can't win at this point by saying the same things that Sam and Hank do. We have to say different things.
But we can make a good showing.
What? I'd rather go down. It's just like I've said with the election. I'd rather lose spectacularly. Like with by 1,000 points.
I wouldn't. I know. There will not be a vote spread that large. The turnout will not be good.
Yeah. it's got to be blood. And got to be blood. Got to be.
Got it. You don't even think.
I can't.
You don't even think Lecter?
I'll let you.
History will forget. History will forget. You want to say Blechter. I'm not getting hit again. Blechter. Okay. I don't think it's Blechter. I think it's blood. We already said Blechter.
All right. We are fighting over this.
Either way, it's just nectar. I'm so sorry that this game has become stressful. It's supposed to be fun.
It's a really cute idea, though. I like that there's a little possum with a little nectar-supping brush tongue.
It has to live with that every day.
Yeah,
think about it.
It's
in its mouth. It can't come. Mm-hmm. It can't take it out. It's in his mouth all the time. That's hilarious.
it's also true of your tongue, which is about, I'd say, probably 4 times bigger than you think it is.
I know how big my tongue is, Hank. It's the strongest muscle in the body, too.
That's what I learned in fifth grade from a person in fifth grade.
Maybe Justin should get a bonus point for that.
No, I don't even
for the tongue facts.
Tell us all the tongue facts, you know. You'll get a point of facts.
What else do you know about tongues?
What?
It's the tongue bonus round.
Well, they're wet.
I have other qualities, you know? I have friends. I'm a good dad.
You have a geographic tongue. This That's is a fine. Thing. That's what? The thing
yeah.
you know about.
Yeah.
It's a tongue fact.
Yeah.
Does your tongue like look like Africa or something? What is a geographic tongue?
It looks like a topographical sort of map. It's a normal variation. There's nothing wrong. Oh. It's just
a special tongue.
Today was a dear diary. Today was so fun. Hank Green beat me at trivia and my wife blew up my tongue spot. Wow. I guess at least I don't have a brush at the end of it. Love, Justin.
Tangent scoop, a special tongue.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. The last one has nothing to do with tongues, so this could be a redemption for Hank against Hank. Hank, just don't know about this bonus round.
I love tongues.
Which starts, it's so annoying when you set out to cook and then you check your fridge or pantry and you're short by just one ingredient. And because cooking is a lot of chemistry, you want to make sure any substitute ingredient you pick will react the same way with heat and other things for the right flavors and textures. So if you happen to be out of eggs and want to be really resourceful, is blood, nectar, or Blechter a decent substitute?
Oh,
it's got to be blood.
Blood, right?
It'd be wild if it was Blechter, though, huh? Where are you getting nectar?
Wouldn't it be easier to get nectar than it would to get blood? Like,
no,
who has
blood's
it?
Right there?
No, it wouldn't.
Yeah,
okay. I got it in my body.
Who is cooking? And they're like, I'm out of eggs, but I do have this blood.
I think this is fanciful. It's fanciful.
Is this a flight of fancy? I was told that this was a scientific program, not a whimsical jaunt.
This is a factual fact in that someone has cooked with the answer things. Ingredient or then ingredients.
It would be blood. Because
the protein.
Who would like do an article in Bon Appetit that's like, guess what? I cooked with nectar. Everybody would be like, okay, whatever.
Cool.
If they're like, I substituted eggs for blood. Then you're selling that for $500 freelance, no problem. You're getting that past the editors. I cooked with blood instead of eggs.
But there's a lot of questions that follow that.
Yeah. Blood is right, and it
didn't make it into Bon Appetit. It made it to the Nordic Food Lab archive, so not as glamorous. But because the egg white about. Most of it is water, but about 50% of the proteins in it is ovalbumin, which is a form of albumin and is a water-soluble protein. There's a lot of albumin also in the serum portion of blood, the watery part of blood. And it congeals in the same way. So they have ratios. You can substitute 65 grams of blood for one egg And they have developed recipes for sourdough blood pancakes, blood ice cream, blood meringues, and chocolate blood sponge cake.
Chocolate blood sponge cake sounds pretty good.
Well, look at the picture and it will turn you right off. Because the pictures of the blood pancakes I saw made me think, I do not want that.
That's all I got for you. That's the end of my very fun, very whimsical, not at all stressful game.
Grand. Well, do you know what that means for our final candy count? Because I got 5 points, which is like the first time I've won tangents in forever and ever. It also says on my document here that Justin and Sydney got 23 points, which I don't think is right. I think that's a typo. Right?
I mean, yeah. That's Mr. Facts, Hank Green, saying that. He knows all kinds of obscure stuff. So I guess it's not supposed to. Said it out loud.
Look, I'm going to give it to myself because I haven't won in so long.
You deserve it. And I did add the three.
Oh, okay. It wasn't a typo. It was a theft.
It was an attempt to cheat.
He made it 12 at first, and then he decided to go big and make it 23.
Go big or go home, baby. Oh, that's
right. Yeah, I'll do both.
I don't think anyone's ever cheated at tangents before. This is a big scandal.
It was just having a little harmless fun, okay? I don't need an asterisk next to our score.
And now it's time for Ask the Science Couch, where we ask a question to our couch of finely honed scientific minds. Sam, what's the question?
At Allie Bowers 26 asks, is placing an IV different from placing a needle for blood donation? If so, how? How are they making sure that stuff only goes in or out? How does it even work in there?
I gotta guess. As a person who's had a bunch of people sticking needles in my body before, it's like, I think it might be a different needle, but it goes in the same hole and it does a different thing. Like, I think the gauge of the needle might be different when you're getting blood out. It seems like it's a bigger needle just from my vibes. And then second, it's definitely like something on the outside is different to keep the pressure pushing in versus the pressure going out.
I bet there's somebody on the call who knows all about it.
I bet that is true. How'd I do, Sydney?
I mean, yeah, that was good. Those were all accurate things.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm not supposed to answer this, right?
Oh, yeah, you can.
Sarah has.
You can weigh in.
Sarah has the answer. You have the
official
answer.
Kind of. The official answer from me, definitely not a doctor. This is not medical advice. It's pretty similar from what I could find. They're both examples of. I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right. Venipuncture. So you very rarely puncture an artery.
Yeah, we use an arterial blood gas if we need to look at the oxygen versus carbon dioxide and pH and all that to make adjustments to like respiratory support and that kind of thing. But it hurts a lot, and we typically don't do it unless we really have to.
Way deeper down, hurts more, higher pressure than veins. And so a lot of the time when you're getting an IV or giving blood in a donation, then it's a vein. Ones in your arm are just fairly easy yeah. to locate. Veins are also just in general more towards the surface, so easier to find, and are generally safer in that if you puncture it incorrectly, then there's less of a chance of something bad happening. Mm-hmm. And as far as I can tell for the difference in collection, if sometimes when you insert an IV into a vein, there can be a backflow of blood because your blood is under pressure. Mm-hmm. So there's not anything specifically that unique, maybe the gauge of the needle, but there are multiple ways that you can make sure things are pumping in the correct direction with an IV. There's gravity IVs, which are the ones where they suspend it above your body and you use gravity to help make sure, like counter the pressure of your blood and have it flow into your body. But then there are also IVs with pumps attached that specifically like pump the fluid actively to counteract your blood pressure. And then donating blood, I think it's a lot of it is just gravity. It's right off your arm. You just goosh it into the bag.
Yeah.
It's pushing it into the bag.
I used to get like every month I'd have to like get a blood test and they just put it in there and it's just like kind of goops out. Because veins, this is what in comparative anatomy, my teacher said, just imagine it like you got a bunch of long balloons. Like veins don't have a lot of like strength to them. It's just sort of like a reservoir almost of blood inside of you. And so when they take it out of your vein, it's just sort of like bloop. Whereas out of an artery, it's under pressure and it's like And arteries are like strong and muscular.
Exactly. Yeah, they're much firmer. I always think it's also kind of comforting that when they place an IV, they use a needle to place it, but the thing that's left behind is just this little thin, flexible catheter.
Yeah.
And I always want to tell, especially if kids are nervous, I always like to tell them that because I feel like you think there's like a needle left inside you and people get real nervous to move.
Yeah, and if you like move wrong, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I did not know
it would,
that.
Like scrape the inside of your body. That's that is good.
They don't leave the needle there.
Yeah. Cool.
Wow.
Real doctor.
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you, Dr. McElroy. If you want to ask the Science Couch your question, you can follow us on Twitter at SciShow Tangents, where we will tweet out topics for upcoming episodes every week, or you can join the SciShow Tangents Patreon and ask us on our Discord. Thank you to Shaky Hades and Ariel the Biologist on Discord. Also, everybody else who asked your questions for this episode. Thank you to Justin and Sydney McElroy. Sawbones is an absolute delight. My wife and I listen to it all the time when we're on car rides, and it just is always super informative and super funny and super interesting. So it's a high quality podcast that I'm glad to have in my life.
Thank you.
You cannot get any chili from them, but if you want to help out Sydney, what's the website?
Sydney's campaign is McElroyForWV.com. That's where you can find out stuff and volunteer and donate and read about Sydney's policies. If you want to hear about our podcasts and stuff, you can go to Blechter.com. That will take you to our family's.
You've really done that.
Yeah,
you did that.
You can go to Blechter.com and you can see all of our family's podcasts and shows and stuff. I was trying to let you all be distracted by letting you all get all the right answers.
He
was the real winner.
It was really a distraction so I could get that incredible URL. I was going to make Blechter go to Sydney's website, but then I was like,
no,
that's a weird
don't
vibe.
Do that.
That's a weird energy.
As you can tell, Justin's like my campaign manager, treasurer, all around. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm the one. Yeah.
PR guy,
putting out
body
signs
man,
and
marketing.
Yeah.
Yep, all of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, Facebook advertising guru, social media ninja is what it says on my business card.
If you like this show and you want to help us out, super easy to do that. You can go to patreon.com/scishowtangents to become a patron, and you can get access to things like our newsletter and our bonus episodes. We even have a tier where you get a special in-episode shout-out, which is what patron John Pollock subscribed at. Thank you, John. Second, you can leave us a review wherever you listen. That's very helpful, and it lets us know what you like about the show. And finally, if you want to show your love for SciShow Tangents, just tell people about us. Thank you for joining us. I've been Hank Green.
I've been Sari Riley.
I've been Sam Schultz.
She's been Sydney McElroy.
And he's been Justin McElroy.
SciShow Tangents is created by all of us and produced by Sam Schultz. Our editor is Seth Glicksman. Our story editor is Alex Billow. Our social media organizer is Julia Buzz Bazzio. Our editorial assistant is Debuki Chakravarti. Our sound design is by Joseph Boon Amedish. Our executive producers are Caitlin Hoffmeister and me, Hank Green. And we couldn't make this, of course, without our putrid patrons on Patreon. Thank you. And remember, the mind is not a coffin to be filled, but a jack-o'-lantern to be lighted.
But one more thing. Snakes have lots of different ways to defend themselves when they're afraid, from hissing and biting to spewing a stinky musk out of glands near their cloaca, which, of course, is their multi-purpose butt and other stuff hole.
Uh-huh. Some species, like long-nosed snakes or black king snakes, are even known to use cloacal auto-hemorrhaging, where they squeeze blood from their butts to scare away potential predators. A few other snake species intentionally bleed from their eyes or mouths instead, which is maybe a little less gross, but way creepier.
So if you're looking for the perfect way to get out of that family reunion, might I suggest
cloacal auto-hemorrhaging.
.com. It's your one-stop shop.
Did you get that too?
It's available.
Sure it is.